This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I said this morning, April 8th is celebrated in Japan as Vesak, the holiday of the Buddha's birthday. In other Southeast Asian countries, because of confusions in the lunar calendar, the same holiday is celebrated in May instead of April, and is combined with commemorations of Buddha's enlightenment and death, as well as his birthday, all on one day. But the Japanese commemorate these on different occasions, and as you know, we traditionally mark Buddha's enlightenment with Rohatsu on December 8th. And the birthday is not particularly significant, at least in sort of the sense of training, the way Rohatsu is in the Zen tradition. But it's a important folk holiday, and it's commemorated by families coming to the temple and their ceremonies in which one symbolically bathes the baby Buddha by pouring water or even, I believe, sweet tea over a little statue of the baby. And we just don't get much about babies in Zen. You know, the core maxim of Buddhism might be, remember you're gonna die. In psychoanalysis, we might say instead, it's remember that you are a child. And it's interesting to put those two things together, or at least juxtapose them, and get a sense of the different emphasis and what it would mean to try to integrate them. One of the only things that we're told in the story about the Buddha's birth is that his mother either died in childbirth or immediately thereafter. So Buddhism becomes a religion of a motherless child. And in many ways one can imagine extrapolating many of its core tenets from that basic beginning. Particularly the whole notion of centrality of impermanence and the futility of attachment and the way in which home leaving is made central to spiritual practice. All of these things, in a way, you could imagine are reactions to that initial trauma of a death of a mother, the shattering of security, the shattering of any expectation of permanence, of the stability of a home. that somehow these cannot be relied on and our practice is going to take us to seek some alternative. In psychological practices, on the other hand, when we're reminded that we were children once and that in a very real sense we still carry aspects of that child within us, we're reminded that our early needs and longings for attachment and dependency and connection and recognition never go away. That these things will always be with us, and that the attempt to deny them or bypass them or transcend them will have consequences of driving them underground or into dissociated self states where they are split off and difficult to acknowledge. In the traditional story of the Buddha's birth, the myth says that right after being born, the Buddha baby took seven steps, or steps in seven directions, and proclaimed above the earth and below the heavens, "I alone am." Again, this kind of a proclamation of absolute aloneness, absolute autonomy. Quite the statement from a baby who's just lost his mother, right? It's this kind of assertion of, I am completely independent and autonomous. What is there for me to lose, right? Now, these old myths are allegories in their own right, and we can't really, psychoanalyze the myths of the Buddha, except to say that we can look at what kinds of truths or what kind of virtues are being allegorized and valorized in these old stories. You know, whoever came up with the image of the baby proclaiming, "I alone am," you know, never had heard of Winnicott's assertion that there's no such thing as a baby, right? Yeah, see, there the lesson is that we do not exist separately. We exist only in relationship, that subjectivity does not precede intersubjectivity, and that there is no autonomous place free of attachment. So a lot of what we typically hear first about Buddhism can make it sound like one elaborate curative fantasy for escaping the trauma of loss and dependency. The practice will lead us away from the world of home life and attachment to parents, a world of desire and longing that can only lead to suffering, and will take us to some realm where we will be free of all that, right? And I think that in a certain sense we have to recapitulate that myth, that curative fantasy, in our own lives and our practice, because in some ways we all come to practice trying to forget that we were once children, all come to practice trying to find that position of strength and autonomy and independence and freedom from loss, freedom from frustrated desire. And we have to go through all that till we can, in some way, come full circle and re-own our humanity and re-own our childhood and re-own our own personal emotional reality. Now, from a practice point of view, the baby Buddha proclaiming I alone am does have an important lesson for how we sit and how we experience what goes on the cushion. There is a way that position of I alone am, you could call absolute subjectivity, that the only thing that exists, the only world that there is what I'm experiencing right here and right now. And there is a way in which it is vital to proclaim that the only experience that there is the one that I'm actually having. So much of the time spent on the cushion is people judging their experience, imagining what other people are going through, imagining what great enlightened masters must have experienced sometime in the past, and endlessly comparing, endlessly judging, endlessly thinking that what's going on in my mind, all these wandering thoughts, all these feelings, all this preoccupation with my painful knee, all of this is somehow not the real thing. That my mind is supposed to become completely free and clear, no thought, pain will somehow go away and be replaced by bliss. All of this is a kind of elaborate way of saying, you know, above the earth, below the heaven, somehow this isn't it. Right? So there is something in that myth that says you absolutely must own as the only reality there is the experience you're actually having. And it means in a certain sense to become the Buddha of this place and this moment, right? To completely see the absolute in all the wanderings of your mind, all the vagaries of your feelings. That's it. That's it. But we really are not going to be able to tolerate or accept that truth if we are in the grip of a attempt to banish the child in us, if we're in the grip of a fantasy that practice is going to take us beyond need and desire. And ceremony of Vesak, of pouring water or tea on the baby Buddha, some way seems very disconnected from our practice. But perhaps what we do have to do is bring the baby back into Buddhism, find a way to honor that part of ourselves in our practice. Remember not just that you're going to die, but that you once were a baby and still are.